heard the first two questions spoken by the sages of Namasharanya, who had gathered in that holy place. I bet everyone remembers the name of Vishnu, at least the English version of the name of Vishnu. By whom the Namasharanya is named. Yes, and what is the meaning of that? Raise your hand if you remember what it is. Raise your hand, I'd just like to see who remembers that. Oh, I thought more would. Yes. Yeah, well, you remember what it is, so I was calling on you. It is. Yep. Yeah, he doesn't close his eyelids. This is a wonderful characteristic of Krishna, of Lord Vishnu. There's no need. So in any case, the sages had gathered in that holy place because activities performed at Namasharanya have great spiritual benefit for the world, more potent. So the sages, just imagine, a meeting is called of great sages because they know a calamity is approaching and they want to forestall that calamity. They want to minimize the dangers of that calamity that's coming. So they perform a sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna because they know when Krishna is pleased and Krishna's devotees are pleased, they know that that can solve all difficulties. So these very powerful sages, they inquired from the most senior, the Shrestha, the best and most senior of those sages whose name was Suta Goswami. They began asking him questions, six questions, and these questions had a specific purpose. That purpose was, in every case, how to remove the evils of Kali. And Kali Yuga is certainly full of evil. There was that very, we could call it a nice verse, except what it would describe wasn't very nice. How the residents of Kali Yuga, their lives will become shorter. In the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, there is more detail on the Kali, this Kali Yuga, and how degrading it is. But here, it is described that in Kali Yuga, people's lives become short. Indeed, they become physically short also. Their lives become short, more and more influenced by ignorance, laziness, unfortunateness, misguidedness, and everyone's mind continuously disturbed by envy, disturbed by passionate desires, disturbed by one thing or another, misery. This is Kali Yuga. So in that state, when people suffer so much, and the remedies people take for their suffering cause worse problems than the suffering itself. So the sages were gathering together at personal inconvenience, performing austerity to do something. So the first thing they did was ask Suta Goswami. We heard two questions that they asked. One was about the Paradhamo, the supreme occupation for all living entities. What is the supreme good for them? What should they be doing? And secondarily, tell us, said the sages, what is the essence? You have been through the entirety of the scriptures. What is their essence? Because in Kali Yuga, People are short of life. They have no memories. It's another characteristic of Kali Yuga. Can't remember anything. So therefore, when it is so hard to learn anything, and after one learns it, it is so hard to remember it, please tell us, the sages said, what is the essence of all Shastra? People can't sit still and learn and listen. So we need things in the sar, the essential form. And we heard the answer to that question, because that paradhamo, that supreme occupation for all living entities, is yatir bhaktir hukyaje. One has to perform devotional service, loving service to Krishna, continuously, apratiyata, with no interruption by jnana or karma or any selfish desire. And it is called causeless, unmotivated. Such service gives rise to all the subsidiary, supportive, corollary principles of religion, such as jnana and vairagya, tapasya, dhan, charity. Asu, jnaniyat yasu, vairagya. Very quickly. Because bhakti itself is svatantra, it is independent, it is not dependent on anything. So if one has bhakti, then everything else automatically comes. So today we will cover the third and fourth question of the sages. So the third question is asked on in text 12.
Sutta janasi badram te bhagavan satvatampati satvatampati.
This will come up, this term comes up also in the second chapter. Bhagavan, that Lord who possesses all opulence, and practically speaking, his greatest opulence is the fact that he is Satvatam Pati or Bhaktavatsal. Pati means the protector, and the Sat are the devotees. So Bhagavan is the protector of his devotees. So Sutta, they are saying, Badram Te, all blessings, all auspiciousness. Badram means auspiciousness, all blessings. May all auspiciousness come to you.
Devakyam vasudevasya jato yasya chikirshaya.
All blessings upon you, O Suta Goswami. You know for what purpose the personality of Godhead appeared in the womb of Devaki, as the son of Vasudeva. You know this. This is the third question. Although it's not phrased directly as a question, please tell us. But it is an indirect way to ask a question. Sort of prodding a little bit. Just like I would say to someone, one of the devotees, you know why such and such person left his house at 7:30 in the morning? You know why Ganesham Prabhu or some of the devotees, they left their house at 7:30 in the morning? Who knows why? Huh? Yeah. But just by asking that, you know why this has happened. It's a prodding to get you to explain why has it happened. But indirectly stated. So here, they're specifically asking, Shaunaka Rishi, the head of the sages, is specifically asking, you know why Krishna appeared. Because Krishna's appearance, personally or in his personal incarnations, since he is independent, he does what he likes, he is not forced to do it. When someone is forced to do something, it's easy to find out why he has done it. Because there is an external force, but there is nothing that forces Krishna. So why he acts is very mysterious. So why is it that this Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, why does he come to this world? This is their question. We will speak very briefly about that answer. Then, after asking that question, and Prabhupada explains very nicely, this Bhadram Te, all blessings upon you, all auspiciousness to you. This is a sign of their anxiety. What is their anxiety? They want to hear about Krishna. So therefore, please, please, of all good fortune to be to you, you please tell us about Krishna. They're actually experiencing anxiety to hear about Krishna. Just like if we could not breathe for a few moments, 3 minutes or something like that, or even after 1 or 2 minutes, so much anxiety will fill our mind. Where is that thing I need so desperately? Our gills will be flabbing. So similarly, the sages, and this is the actual condition of a devotee, that when they can't hear about Krishna, they feel that they have no purpose in their life. A day gone by without Krishna Katha is thought of as a wasted day. Anxiety to hear about Krishna. So they're asking about that from Sutta Goswami. Then the next question that they ask is in text 17. But between 12 and 17, there is 13, 14, 15, and 16. And interesting points are covered in these verses. The next question is in 17. So in text 13, they say, O Sutta Goswami, we are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and his incarnations. This is the hint at the next question that they are going to ask. They want to know about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they also want to know about his incarnations. And in the next question, which is in text 17, as we said, and in the question following that, the fifth question, they're going to ask about two different types of incarnations. In 17, when we hear that, we'll hear, as our acharyas have explained, they ask about how Krishna incarnates as a kala, or a portion of a plenary portion, or an expansion of an expansion, a secondary expansion, how he incarnates in that way for the purpose of dealing with the material world. How does he expand the material world for this type of incarnation? That will be in 17. And in 18 is, tell us about other incarnations. This is the anxiety of such devotees of Shaunaka Rishi and the sages. They want to hear about Krishna, the personality of Godhead and his incarnation. And this, as Prabhupada explains in his purport, is one of the conditions or the requirements to be a good student in the Vedic system, that one must want to hear, one must be eager. Prabhupada says, eager to hear and sincere. Sincere means there is no motivation, unmixed desire, just because one wants to hear and learn about Krishna. That's why one wants to hear. One wants to make advancement. This is the qualification. Plus submissiveness. This is explained in so many other places. These are the basic qualifications. And for the speaker, as it explains, please explain to them. So this is the sages talking. We are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and His incarnations. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by the previous masters, the Acharyas. For one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. This is the nature of this Krishna Katha. That one is benefited by hearing them and one is benefited by speaking them. As it is described that Sukadev Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj, Sukadev the speaker and Parikshit Maharaj, both were perfect and exactly on the same platform of perfection, and one was speaking and the other was hearing the Bhagavatam. The hearer was qualified and the speaker was qualified. The speaker was qualified because he had heard properly and he was repeating in a realized fashion what he had heard. And the hearer was qualified because he was very eager and sincere. And both are uplifted by that. So it is a wonderful transcendental occurrence. And everyone is benefited by it. So this is the qualifications for this type of Krishna Katha to go on. Someone can't be speaking and saying, well, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, surrender unto me, but actually what he means is not surrender unto me, but surrender unto the unborn within him. No, one can't squeeze out his own interpretation. One has to follow what he has heard from his spiritual master and the Acharyas. And then on the other side, the hearers must be very eager to learn. Not just putting in time, not motivated by anything other than to learn sincerely. So that is text 13. Now, text 14, 15, and 16 are linked together. Those are the prior verses to text 17, where the first question about the incarnations, the Purusha avatars, the kalas, will be asked. So these three verses, 13, 14, 15, and 16, are meant to build up our enthusiasm to hear. And how do they do this? Quite interesting. Text 14. Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death. What is a mesh? What a mesh. Something like that. No, what is a mesh? Crisscrossed like a net. Meshing is, it's like a net, iron netting, like that. So entangled in the net of the complicated meshes of birth and death, so entangled in material existence, which forces us to die and be born, and die and be born. So such a person, even though we are caught, entangled so heavily in this, our minds are so entangled, such a person can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified. So there's the point is made here that how potent the holy name of Krishna is that just by unconsciously chanting it, one is freed from birth and death. So is it glorifying the unconscious chanting of the holy names? Not exactly. If the unconscious chanting of the holy names
is so powerful. Just imagine how powerful the conscious chanting of the holy names is. Like if we say, this person is so powerful, when he stretches, he can knock over a mountain. That's something inconsequential. His stretching has such a great effect. So imagine if he wanted to pop you in the nose or something like that. So that is an indirect way of glorifying the person's power. So similarly, just imagine how powerful Krishna's names are if one chants them with great loving devotion. So this is glorifying Krishna, the names of Krishna, and because the name of Krishna is the same as Krishna, this is a glorification of Krishna. So who is this Krishna that is so powerful that just if someone unconsciously, hela means neglectfully, or parihas means even mocking. If one chants Krishna's names even in this way, there is such great effect. So how powerful are the pure names? And then how powerful is that person who possesses such names that are so powerful? And then an example, that the holy name of Krishna is feared by fear personified. That means that whatever makes us afraid, whatever causes fear in our heart, that thing is afraid of Krishna. And therefore, there is no question of that standing before Krishna when we chant Krishna's names. So Prabhupada explains so nicely in his purport. The name of Krishna is none different from Krishna. Therefore, the name of Krishna is as powerful as Lord Krishna himself. There is no difference at all. Anyone, therefore, can take advantage of the holy names of Lord Sri Krishna even in the midst of the greatest dangers. There is no danger that is so great that Krishna's names cannot drive it away effortlessly. So there, for glorification of Krishna by glorifying his names. And the next verse, 15, O Suta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, they can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them. Whereas the water of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use. So if a person, tirthabhutani tirthani, svantasthena gadhabhritaha, because the devotees, and this is so sweetly explained by the Lord himself, actually, when Durvasa Muni goes seeking shelter of Lord Narayan, Lord Narayan glorifies his devotees in such a sweet way that is so powerful. He says, my devotees are more powerful than me practically. They are living in my heart and I am living in their hearts. So here it is said that just one who has taken shelter of this Lord, Lord Krishna, is so powerful that he's more powerful than the Ganges. Because the Ganges, Gangara parasya hoile paschate pavan, Dashane pavitra koro eto maragun. That the Ganga, it is definitely purifying to one. But after prolonged use, exactly what this verse says. But darshane pavitra koro, just by having your darshan, just by seeing you, or being seen by you, that is your quality, that the purification happens so quickly. Pavitra koro, quickly purified. That is your quality. Eto maragun. So who is this glorification of? This is glorification of the devotees. But if by taking shelter of someone, one becomes so powerful, that is another way of glorifying that Lord. So his name is so powerful, and one who takes shelter of him is so powerful. And therefore, text 16, who is there who desires deliverance from the vices of the age of quarrel, the difficulties and pains and miseries of Kali Yuga, the mental, physical, spiritual tortures of Kali Yuga? Who is there who desires deliverance from that, who will not take shelter, who is not willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord, which are so powerful? This Lord, Krishna, is so powerful that by taking shelter of him, that person becomes so powerful, can purify one. And by chanting his names, even inattentively and unconsciously, when it's released from birth and death. So how wonderful the glory. What are the activities of such a person who is so powerful? So they want, they're saying, they're encouraging us to hear this, because they're encouraged to hear of the glories of the Lord. Prabhupada in his purport, I'll read it quickly. He describes something of Kali Yuga. The age of Kali is the most condemned age due to its quarrelsome features. Kali Yuga is so saturated with vicious habits that there is a great fight at the slightest misunderstanding. Those who are engaged in pure devotional service of the Lord, who are without any desire for self-aggrandizement, and who are freed from the effects of fruitive actions and dry philosophical speculation, are capable of getting out of the estrangements of this complicated age. The leaders of the people are very much anxious to live in peace and friendship, but they have no information of the simple method of hearing the glories of the Lord. On the contrary, such leaders are opposed to the propagation of the glories of the Lord. In other words, the foolish leaders want to completely deny the existence of the Lord. In the name of a secular state, such leaders are enacting various plans every year. But by the insurmountable intricacies of the material nature of the Lord, all these plans for progress are being constantly frustrated. They have no eyes to see that their attempts at peace and friendship are failing. But here is the hint to get over the hurdle. If we want actual peace, we must open the road to understanding of the Supreme Lord Krishna and glorify him for his virtuous activities as they are depicted in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So who will not listen to this? Kona kuryad kataratim. Who will not listen and get a taste for this Krishna kata? Now in 17, the second question is asked. His transcendental acts, what was the first question? In text 12. What was the first question? The third question, actually. The first question today in text 12. Either all say it loudly and in unison, or one person could say it or raise your hand or something. Yes, please tell us what. Tell us why did Krishna appear? What was it, what did he want to do? Isn't it independent? Tell us about Krishna. And this question is, his transcendental acts are magnificent and gracious, and great learned sages like Narada sing of them. Please, therefore, speak to us who are eager to hear about the adventures he performs in his various incarnations. So there are different incarnations, and this one will be referred to
as the incarnations in dealing with the material world and the creation of the material world. So let us turn after. So there have been four things that have been discussed so far. There are two questions. Tell us about Krishna and the purpose of his appearance, specifically asking the purpose of Krishna's appearance. And secondly, tell us about the incarnations and their dealings with the material world. Now, to answer those questions, we'll turn to the second chapter and we'll read text 30 through 34. The second question is answered first. Tell us about the Lord and his incarnations in dealing with the material world. Now, this question, as all the questions, aren't answered in one or two or three verses. There's so much in the second and third canto about the Lord's dealing with the material world, especially the second canto, and much of the third canto deals with this topic too. But here, in text 30, 31, 32, and 33, there is a brief description of the three Paramatmas, the Karna, Daksha, Vishnu. And what he does, the Lord does, to the first thing that he does to in the creation of the material world. In the beginning of the material creation, so this is the answer. This is the answer to the fourth question, actually. In the beginning of the material creation, that absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudev, and Srila Jiva Goswami explains how Sutta Goswami wishes us to understand that it is Vasudev who is Vishnu, because the beginning of the Bhagavatam starts with obeisances, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So it is Vasudev, who is the son of Vasudev, who is the same as Vishnu, none different from Vishnu. So in the beginning of the material creation, that absolute personality of Godhead, Vasudev, in his transcendental position, created the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. So the spiritual supreme personality of Godhead is there, and as will be explained in the next verse, although he deals indirectly with the material energy, he is always beyond the material energy. This point is essential for us to always remember, because it is a simple point now. We should take it and memorize it, that no matter what the Lord does in his incarnations, he is never the same as an ordinary living entity. What he does is always transcendental. It has nothing to do with the material energy. His motivations have nothing to do with the desire to enjoy. He is always transcendentally situated. So this is one of the first concepts that we have to deeply embed within our consciousness. Why? Because remember, this Bhagavatam is training us. Training us to what? Training us to understand the activities of Krishna in Braja especially. So when we hear how Karana Daksha Vishnu is there and universes are coming from his skin holes, the pores of his skin, it is easy to remember he's transcendental and beyond matter, because an ordinary person can't do that. But when Krishna is dancing with the gopis or fighting with his cowherd boyfriends, performing his Naralila, then it is easier to get confused. It is easier to get confused and think, why is he doing this? Why is he acting in an immoral way?
So this concept has to be deeply embedded in our consciousness. So he, Vasudev, the Lord, is in a transcendental position. And what is the first thing he does? He creates the energies of cause and effect by his own internal energy. He creates the basic substance of the material world that is called pradhan, the primal substance. And then later when we hear the second and third canto, we'll hear how the creation progresses in more detail. But this is the first thing that he does. He is outside the material element and he's lying down on the Karana causal ocean and he creates this pradhan. And then he glances in it. Then the next thing he does is explained in the text 32. After creating the material substance, the Lord Vasudev expands himself and enters into it. So what is that Lord's name who has expanded himself from Karna Daksha Vishnu and enters into the material creation? Garbha Daksha Vishnu. Although he is within the material modes of nature and appears to be one of the created beings, he is always fully enlightened in his transcendental position. Again, this point is being made that when the Lord is seemingly within matter, he is not within matter. When an ordinary living entity comes within the material world, he becomes covered by ignorance and forgetfulness. But when Krishna is in the material world, he's actually not in the material world. He's always in transcendence. So this is Garbha Daksha Vishnu. He enters an expansion of Karna Daksha Vishnu. He enters into the womb of the material nature, into the Garbha. The womb, Garbha means womb. He enters into the material nature and he is transcendentally situated there. He is not in the material nature. He actually has nothing to do with the material nature. Now the next two verses, 32 and 33, describe the basic two functions, or two basic functions of the third of the Purusha avatars, Chiradakshay Vishnu, who is the super soul in every living entity, and that will be describe second. The first is in text 32, the Lord as super soul, he pervades all things. Just as fire permeates wood, and so he appears to be of many varieties, although he is the absolute one without a second. Krishna explains this feature in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, just at the end, when he explains with a single portion of my energy. This is what he's talking about. Is there a Bhagavad Gita? Ekam Sena Stito Jagat Vishtabhyaham Idam Kritsnam Ekam Sena Eka Amsa Stito Jagat. Stito means that I support Jagat, the universe. Vishtabhyaham Idam Kitsnam. Yeah, Vishtabhyaham means, Vishtabhya means all pervading. Aham, I am all pervading. Idam Kitsnam. By this one part of my part, I pervade and support everything. This is the super soul. This is the pure Daksha Vishnu. Prabhupada explains very nicely in his purport something wonderful in this. Because we could say that, okay, God is everywhere, he's supporting everything. But what is the use? I can't perceive him anywhere. He may be everywhere, but I can't perceive him anywhere. I just see dull matter everywhere, and I'm caught by it. Help! So Prabhupada explains in the purport, matter, antimatter, protons, neutrons, etc., are all different effects of the Paramatma feature of the Lord. As from wood, fire can be manifested, or as butter can be churned out of milk, so also the presence of the Lord as Paramatma can be felt by the process of legitimate hearing and chanting of the transcendental subjects, which are especially treated in the Vedic literatures, like the Upanishads and Vedanta. Srimad Bhagavatam is the bona fide explanation of these Vedic literatures. The Lord can be realized through the oral reception of the transcendental message, and that is the only way to experience the transcendental subject. As fire is kindled from wood by another fire, the divine consciousness of man can be similarly be kindled by another divine grace. His divine grace, the spiritual master, can kindle the spiritual fire from the wood-like living entity by imparting proper spiritual messages injected through the receptive ear. Therefore, one is required to approach the proper spiritual master with receptive ears only. And thus divine existence is gradually revealed. The difference between animality and humanity lies in this process only. A human being can hear properly, while an animal cannot. When wood comes in contact with fire, then the fire which is inherently in the wood is evoked, comes out. So similarly, when we ourselves, our souls, have a spiritual nature, and that, like the wood within the fire within the wood is evoked when it comes in contact with a blazing spark of spiritual energy in the form of hidden, and that is His divine grace. And divine existence is gradually realized as the spark of our spiritual life begins to flame and burn brightly. So that is one function of the super soul. And actually that is the super soul's business practically, is to lead us. He waits to lead us and give us His divine grace. So text 30, the Lord as Karana Dakshai Vishnu, He creates the material ingredients, then He enters. In 31, while remaining transcendental, He enters it as Garbhadakshay Vishnu. In 32, He pervades everything in the material world that is Kiridakshay Vishnu, and also at Kiridakshay Vishnu, text 33. The super soul enters into the body, so He enters into everything outside of us, and also enters into us. Ishwara Savabhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishtiti. He enters into the bodies of the created beings who are influenced by the modes of material nature. And He causes them to enjoy the effects of these modes by the subtle mind. So much can be said about this. How the mind, because it's attached to that enjoyment, that allows the supersoul, or causes the supersoul, to reciprocate with our desires for material enjoyment. If that attachment is broken between the mind and the sense objects, and rather the attachment is created to spirit, then the supersoul will perform a different function as described, than described here. He will advise us in a different way, Prabhupada explains in the purport. He proposes and the Lord disposes, meaning man. In another sense, the living beings are parts and parcels of the Lord. They are therefore one with the Lord. In the Bhagavad Gita, the living entity and all varieties of bodies have been claimed by the Lord as His sons. The sufferings and enjoyments of the sons are indirectly the sufferings and enjoyments of the father. Still, the father is not in any way affected directly by the suffering and enjoyment of the sons. He is so kind that he constantly remains with the living being as Paramatma and always tries to convert the living being towards the real happiness.
And now, so that is the function of the Lord as the Purusha avatars, the three Purusha avatars, in relationship to the material world, which answers question 17. And now, for the answer to 12, or the, as indicated by our acharyas, text 34.
Bhavatyati yesha satmena lokanvai lokabhavana lilavatarano roto devatiryanaradishu.
Thus the Lord of the universes maintains all planets inhabited by the demigods, by the men and lower animals. Assuming the roles of incarnations, he performs pastimes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. Shut up. See, you told him in English and he wouldn't leave. You tell him in Hindi and he goes. If you tell him in Hindi and then hit him and he leaves. But even everyone is attracted to Krishna Katha. Isn't it wonderful? Maybe he's attracted to Krishna's Mausya Leela.
So Krishna comes to reclaim those in the mode of pure goodness. How does he do that?
Prabhupada explains in the purport, and we'll read another couple of references on this point, why Krishna comes and how he reclaims those in pure goodness. At the end of this purport, the last paragraph.
Sometimes he incarnates himself or empowers a suitable living being to act for him. But in either case, the purpose is the same. This is why Krishna comes. The Lord wants the suffering living being to go back home, back to Godhead. The happiness which the living beings are hankering for is not to be found within any corner of the innumerable universes and material planets. Even if we searched out every corner of every planet, meaning every possible situation in which we think we may find some happiness, we will not find happiness. The only way to get our happiness is to get out, and Krishna wants to take us back to Godhead. The eternal happiness which the living being wants is obtainable in the kingdom of God. But the forgetful living beings under the influence of the material modes have no information of the kingdom of God. The Lord, therefore, comes to propagate the message of the kingdom of God, either personally as an incarnation or through his bona fide representative as the good Son of God. Such incarnations or sons of God are not making propaganda for going back to Godhead only within the human society. Their work is also going on in all types of societies, amongst demigods and those other than human beings. So the purpose of the Lord coming, Krishna coming, is to bring the help, bring the living entities from this material world to the spiritual world, back to Godhead. I'd like to read two other references as to why Krishna comes, which are also explained in the Bhagavatam. This is from Kunti Devi's prayers. After describing what many people say are the reasons to come, that Krishna comes, here she says, "And yet, others say that you appear to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, worshipping, and so on, in order that the conditioned souls suffering from material pangs might take advantage and gain liberation." So how Krishna comes to take us back to Godhead, to help us go back to Godhead, so how does he do it? Appears to rejuvenate the devotional service of hearing, remembering, and worshipping. To enliven everyone, to speak, to remember, and to hear about Krishna. And by doing this, the living entities will gain liberation, if they take advantage of it. Prabhupada explains in his purport, in the second paragraph. This, by the way, is the eighth chapter of the first canto, text 35. He explains, "The Lord, however, out of his causeless mercy, because he is more merciful to the suffering living entities than they can expect, he appears before them." Krishna comes to this world to attract us to his lila. And by appearing before them, he renovates the principles of devotional service, which are comprised of hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshipping, praying, cooperating, and surrendering unto him. Adoption of all the above-mentioned items, or any one of them, can help a conditioned soul get out of the tangle of nescience, and thus become liberated from all material sufferings created by the living being illusion by the external energy. This particular type of mercy is bestowed upon the living being by the Lord in the form of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He makes it very easy, this Kali Yuga avatar, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he makes it very easy to get out by teaching the method of Harinam Sankirtan and speaking Krishna Katha and preaching Krishna Katha, hearing about Krishna, speaking about Krishna, talking about Krishna. Bodayantas paraspara kantyantas tamam nityam. Then tashanti cha ramanti cha. One feels satisfaction and bliss. So Krishna comes to display his lila, especially in Vrindavan, his childhood lila, which is so attractive. And it fulfills the need that every living entity has who is in this material world for that perfect relationship. One more reference and then we'll stop. Why does Krishna come? Drona and Dara prayed to Lord Brahma. Oh, they're the best of the Vasus. They want Krishna as their son. So they pray. Jatayo nao Mahadeve Bhuvi Vaveshvare Harao Bhaktisyat Paramaloke Yagyan Jo Durgatim Tadet. Drona and Dara said, "Please permit us to be born on the planet Earth, so that our appearance, that after our appearance, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller and Master of all planets, he will also appear and spread devotional service, the ultimate goal of life, so that those born in the material world may very easily be delivered from the miserable condition of materialistic life by accepting this devotional service." And Prabhupada explains in the purport. "Foolish people do not know how risky life is here if one does not follow the instructions of Krishna. This Krishna consciousness movement, therefore, has been started so that by practicing Krishna consciousness, one can avoid the risky life of this material existence. There is no question of accepting or not accepting Krishna consciousness. It is not optional. It is compulsory. If we do not take to Krishna consciousness, our life is very risky. Everything is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, to learn how to become free from the miserable conditions of material existence, Bhagavad Gita as it is the preliminary study. Then, if one understands Bhagavad Gita, one can proceed to Srimad Bhagavatam. And if one advances further, one may study Chaitanya Charitamrita. We are therefore," Prabhupada said, "presenting these invaluable books to the whole world so that people may study them and be happy, being delivered from a from miserable conditioned life." When Brahma said, "Yes, let it be so," to the request of Drona and Dara, the most fortunate Drona, who was equal to Bhagavan, appeared in Brajapur, Vrindavan, as the most famous Nanda Maharaj, and his wife Dara appeared as Mother Yasoda. So quickly, in summary, we described the third and fourth questions of the sages to Suta Goswami. The third question was, why did Krishna appear? And what is the answer? Yes. Anything else? Why did Krishna appear? What did the verse say? Yeah. To reclaim those souls who are pure in pure goodness, to enliven the process of devotional service, to attract the living entities, to make sure to point everyone towards his devotion. Why? Why is Krishna doing that? So that the living entities who are enmeshed in this vast and complicated network of Maya, which means suffering, especially in Kali Yuga, can get out and go back home, be liberated from this suffering, birth and death. Go to Goloka Vrindavan. And the second question, in text 17, was Krishna's dealings with the material world as his incarnations, the Purusha avatars. First Krishna enters, first he creates the material ingredient, then he enters in it while remaining transcendental, then he pervades everything and enters everyone's heart. And in between 12 and 17, there's 13, which describes the qualifications for hearing and for proper the proper transmission of the transcendental knowledge. The speaker must be qualified, having heard this properly, and the hearers must be what? Yes, eager and sincere and submissive. Very simple. And Prabhupada uses the phrase, injected. This medicine will be injected within the ear. And then, three verses, 14, 15, and 16, encouraging us to hear the glories of Krishna, first by saying the potency of the name. Even if it's unconsciously chanted, it frees one from death. And then, if someone takes shelter of Krishna, he's so powerful that he purifies one. So therefore, if these two aspects of Krishna are so glorious, he is even still more glorious, and therefore who will not take the time to hear about this unless these people like to taste the sweetness of the poison of Kali Yuga, of death and suffering in so many ways? Who will not hear this? Konad, Kuryat, Katara, Tim, who will not want to develop this taste? Okay, we'll stop. Thank you very much. So tomorrow, we'll, if Krishna allows, we'll go over the fifth and sixth question. Different incarnations. The tortoise and the fish incarnation. But I don't know much about the others. Do you remember Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained something?
He says that you put human in every species, even the birds and the vegetable tribes.
The vegetable tribes? You know about the rabbit incarnation? Yeah, Hare Krishna. You can have that. You see also the example. First, even in the human species, you elevate them. They have to be elevated. So this is the mercy, especially of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that he doesn't only take the purified souls, but he brings the souls by the Harinam Sankirtan and the process of Krishna consciousness to the pure platform, and then he takes them. So the example of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the Jarikanda forest, he had all the animals
even the elephants and the tigers and the deer, they were dancing in ecstasy. You have them crying and dancing and chanting. That obviously takes special potency, as Prabhupada once said, but we should try to get the humans to chant. Any other questions? You can say that because the Kira Dakshaya Vishnu comes from Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu, you can say that these things are all, you can also say that these things are a function of Garbha Dakshaya Vishnu. This is actually described, a similar principle is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because there's no difference in one sense. Yes. Not only does he support the life of the living entity, he supports the existence by his Sandini Shakti. So something cannot be alive without the support of Krishna as Paramatma, but nothing can exist without Krishna. Everything is resting upon him. The existence of everything is resting on his sat potency. No, there's so much. The living body is a dead body, right? But it's the soul that's alive within the dead body. So these are just two different energies of Krishna.
So in the dead matter, there is no super soul.
No, there is. Everything. He's everywhere. Not only. This is my understanding. He's everywhere. This is what this verse describes.
He can be there.
He is everywhere. Nothing would exist without him. This is what he explains in the 10th chapter. That's the meaning of this. Ekam Sena Stito Jagat. It is upon my Eka Amsa that everything is resting. This is...
So then how do you understand? What's the difference really between that?
Between matter and the soul. No, there's different energy, but both those energies, one is the Chetragya and the other is Avidya. This is from Vishnu Purana, Avidya Karma. So one this Maya Shakti and Jiva Shakti. So one is conscious, has individual consciousness, and the other doesn't.